It's the Serie Awesome podcast, and welcome back. We have so many matches for you to listen to while we review and preview everything that's coming up. I'm Mina Rizuki, your host, and as ever, I'm joined by Nikki Bandini and the lovely Gab Marcotti. Gets very upset when I don't say lovely. Hello, guys. How are you?
Very well.
Right. It's been an exciting weekend. I'd love to tell you that there's only a one-point difference between Juve and Lazio, but Lazio did the job against Torino, and Juve went on to score three of the most fantastic goals I've ever seen against Genoa. Obviously, Nikki started trolling me about Dybala because, you know, she won't let that go. And what I wanted to say is, now that Juve are back to scoring lots of goals and finally Ronaldo not scoring penalties, but actual goals, and a beautiful one at that, does that mean everything's all good at Juve? Because maybe for once it wasn't so much about individual play and Sarri's game just clicking. Or can we be really serious here and say, this is Genoa, so let's not get too optimistic about everything going forward?
I think we're still, for me, we're still in a phase of non-definitive answers. I think this was, certainly in my opinion, Juventus' best performance since the restart. All three goals, you say, absolutely outrageously good. It was like an escalating scale. Each one I thought was better than the last, and the first from Dybala was already pretty flipping good. So three brilliant goals, very much, as I tweeted, felt like the Harlem Globetrotters Juve showed up. And it wasn't just the goals. There was much more speed to this team. There was much more zip to the passing and the movement than there had been in some of the games earlier since the restart. But I sort of hesitate to get overwhelmed by it because we are still talking about they've played Bologna, they've played Lecce, they've played Genoa. These aren't teams that, it matters. It matters to beat these teams and to beat them well. In the last two games in particular, they've won well. And their rivals are not winning well. Their rivals are scraping to those wins. But nevertheless, these are not the teams that you expect to trip them up. It can happen. And every game takes you a step closer when you're already in front. So it's all good. But the next month is going to bring some very, very different fixtures. They've still got to play Lazio, obviously. They've still got to play Atalanta. They've still got to play Roma. They've still got to play Milan, who drew with them both legs in the Coppa semi-final. So, and in fact, the next game is the Turin derby, which will be very different behind closed doors, and Torino themselves are not doing well, but it's still a fixture with a certain different feeling to it and perhaps a certain different pressure to it. So I think there's still things to find out about Juventus and how they cope with better teams, but it's a positive trajectory. They're, in my opinion, they're definitely playing better football than they were at the beginning of this restart. And again, the speed of those interchanges, the fact that you've got Ronaldo up and running, because that was the thing I talked about at the beginning. Would we see that same topic of Ronaldo early season form that we sometimes get come up in August? And that hasn't really happened. So there's lots to be encouraged about. I just don't know that I'm not ready to crown them quite yet.
I think if you go back to the Lecce game, I mean, leave the scoreline to one side. I don't think they played particularly well or anywhere near as well as they played against Genoa. Mm. And I think in some ways there are some parallels there because Genoa especially, but also Lecce, these were teams that they didn't come out and attack Juve the way Bologna tried to do, right? And I think what we've seen of Juve is they haven't been comfortable when they've had to take the initiative, precisely for the reasons that we mentioned, with the midfield just not been good. They were moving the ball too slowly. Against Genoa, they had to take the initiative, and they moved the ball quickly. The midfield played well, I thought. I thought even Pjanic played well. I thought even Rabiot played well. So that is the encouraging takeaway, right? We want to see a multi-dimensional Juve that doesn't just want to it doesn't just win games off of set pieces or Ronaldo leathering it from 40 yards or counterattacks or whatever, but they can also play in a half-court situation, if I can borrow a euphemism, and create chances. And they did it against Genoa. I think in some ways that's more significant than them going to play, I don't know, against their Roma or in Atalanta and winning by a lot of goals.
But does it not at all scare you, the fact that when you look at the first half, that Genoa held on for so long, that, you know, there was this, you know, let's pass the ball as many times as possible, but there wasn't really a team goal. I mean, Dybala was fantastic in the way that he weaved his way past and sort of scored the opener. And after that, you felt like Genoa let go.
It doesn't scare me because I'm not a Juve fan. So, no, it fills me with hope.
I'm sure that actually really pleases you. But in general, I'm not sitting there thinking to myself, yeah, this is an overwhelming side and the goals are coming because they're overwhelming. No. It is still a worldie from Ronaldo. It is still a worldie from Douglas Costa, right?
So, what's the last Juve team that you saw that was overwhelming? And you go back to some Conte teams, right? So
I do think Allegri's side that reached the two Champions League final, you could see it was a team effort. This is, for me, you take out Ronaldo and Dybala, and I'm not entirely sure this team can do very much, you know?
But, I mean, I take your point. I see where you're coming from. But what I want in those situations is a midfield that can keep the ball and continue getting it to the front men in dangerous areas, right? They did that. It's the nature of Juve's frontmen that these are individuals. So you're not necessarily going to see tremendous team goals. That's not what Douglas Costa's been built for. Ronaldo can do obviously a bit of everything, but the way this season's gone, he's not really part of the attacking schemes. So just get him the ball in those areas and wait for him to do something. Look, compared to previous games, Juve's midfield wasn't even doing that. You know, Dybala and Cristiano had to pick up the ball in their own half to go and do some damage. So That part's encouraging, I think. But let me ask you this. All right, I was in totally in two minds about the Archer for Pjanic swap. There's a part of me said, yeah. Originally, I thought, you know what? Knowing how superstitious people are, and especially Sarri, does he look at Archer and say like, oh, look, the last time I had a Brazilian midfielder who was busy and you know, whose name was short and a first name. He ran around like a maniac. He was really good. He played again alongside a defensive playmaker, and that was Allen at Napoli. This guy's going to be the same. And I didn't feel like he necessarily put a lot of thought into what Archer would bring. Looking at it now, looking at the financial benefit of it that Juve got by this swap, and it is an accounting swap, I think, rather than anything that was actually studied, I figure, you know what, maybe that's not such a bad thing. But it does, and what I want to ask you is, it puts a lot of pressure on Bentancur because he's going to have to be the playmaker, right?
I think that the thing is that what you have with Arturo is somebody who actually knows how to keep possession as well. So I think that, to be honest, it can be interchangeable because they are both very good at doing both sides of the game, in the sense that they are both very good at keeping possession and running forward and delivering the perfect, I think together they can be this fantastic duo. I'm extremely happy with the deal, to be honest, yeah. I think it's been made obvious that I do like Pjanic, and I think that his farewell speech or whatever it is that he printed on Instagram was so lovely to read. And he's had his moments, certainly. He's certainly a very talented player. But for me, he was never somebody that I could really depend on in the big matches. And everyone talks about, you know, oh, it's an improved performance against Genoa. Well, I should hope so. It's Genoa. And for me, it's still just a very small improvement. This isn't a player that I've come to depend on. So Arturo being younger, I feel like Juventus are very good at talking and sort of improving players that have a sensitivity side to them. You know, like Morata, for example, really blossomed and was thriving at Juventus. They don't seem to have all these insecurities when they come there. So I think this is a great deal. I'm still not yet certain how the player went from 31 million to 72, only playing, 38 games for Barcelona. But sure, if that's his valuation, that's his valuation. But
well, I can answer that question. It's purely an accounting game. Come on. You're being funny there, right? You know this. So this is purely, they could have put 150 million on there. You know, it makes no difference.
Have we talked through that on this podcast? I mean, I don't know, everyone maybe knows it now, by now, but I mean, do you want to sort of do a quick synopsis gab of the plusvalenza?
Yeah,
I think it's important for people to know why, you know, because this is being mentioned.
It's the magic of amortization. So basically, the way accounting works is when you sell something and you get money coming in, you can book that as profit straight away. When you buy something, you amortize or you spread the cost of your acquisition over the life of the player's contract. So in this case, the money that they're spending on Arthur they're only spending, which is, right, I mean, let's go with the 72 million, right? So if it's 72 million, I know there's 10 million in bonuses, but if it's 72 million and it's a 5-year deal, then it's costing them 14.4 million. Whereas the Pjanic money, which I believe is 62 million, correct me if I'm wrong here.
65 with bonuses.
Right. Or no, I think it's actually, sorry, 60 million plus 5 in bonuses, right?
In bonuses, yeah.
Yeah. So they can book the 60 million straight away. And that's why Juve put out that on their website, on their statement to shareholders, they put out there's a net positive effect, as they call it, of 41.8 million net of commissions, because, you know, the usual agents got paid here, and solidarity payments, which they would have had to pay. So yeah, it's an accounting thing. It doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad move in the end. I mean, the reason it's 82 is because Pjanic was, or whatever. I mean, we've seen so many versions of the number. The reason it's so high is because Pjanic was so high going the other way.
So that is what it is. So they can now add, Juventus can now add 60 million to their accounts and then spread to the 72, rather spread the cost of buying Arturo over 5 years.
And they do it before July 1st. So that's also another important thing, because it affects the 2019-20 reporting period.
Inter had a game of their own over the weekend. I have a lot to say about this one, so I don't want to start off it because I feel like it might just run into being a monologue, but they did eventually win over Parma. Parma is really proving itself. Everyone talks about Sassuolo and all the, you know, their coach, but for me, Daversa is such a great coach and Parma is such a great team. And I felt like they really did their homework for this match, and it was such a shame that they didn't even walk away with a point. But well done to the winning mentality of Conte's boys.
That was a robbery, I thought. It was a robbery. It wasn't that Inter were the better team in that game. They found two goals at the end. And I think that you're right to give credit to Parma, because, I mean, look, Parma beat Genoa more emphatically than Juventus did. Parma playing some pretty good football so far since the restart. The Gab's clearly unimpressed. No. Gab's not having any of it. I mean, I don't know that I have a huge heap to be impressed about with Inter. I think that perhaps, including myself here, some of us need to grow back a little bit on the initial sort of enthusiasm that met the, oh, Christian Eriksen is all set now and he's going to be transformative by the attack, because he wasn't special in this game at all. It was one of those moments in a game where you get the goal and the other team rocks and you manage to capitalize on it fully. I mean, something to be said for Bastoni, who is now still the only Inter player to have scored a goal off the bench this season, has done it twice. So something to be said for his contribution as the improbable super sub goal scorer. But
yeah, that was a real tough goal to score.
Great as well.
Like a lamppost could have put that in. I mean, my issue with Parma is I don't have a problem with, like, that's all I always say, team plays well. I don't have a problem with a team deciding that they're going to play the 7-0-3 formation and have seven people lined up on the goal line and just lump the ball forward to your front three. If that's what suits you, that's fine.
Kulusevski, wait, are you saying Jorginho, that Kuchka in midfield weren't doing anything?
I mean, they were defending, winning the ball back and giving it to the front three. All those chances that they created in the first half were almost all on the counter. I don't think that that's great football in the sense that I don't think it can translate higher up. I think we've seen teams this season, including small teams, play. I mean, I'll mention Verona as an example. If we don't, I mean, Atalanta is their own story, but we've seen Verona, we've seen Sassuolo, we've seen Bologna at times, Fiorentina at times, play, I think, much better football. But they played that brand of football, and they played that brand of football very, very well. That said, I think with Inter, there's something we already know, that if I were to ask you, where is the creativity going to come from in the side against an opponent that sits and defends very deep and creates a lot of density, it's going to come from Brozovic, who wasn't there, Sensi, who wasn't there, Candreva, who can provide it maybe once or twice a game, or Eriksen, who was there, but only in body. And I agree with Mina, he had a terrible game. So at that point, Inter are really going to struggle to create against anybody. I mean, I think people know that that is a formula to beat Inter, because there aren't that many creative players in the side. And if a team's well-drilled, it becomes really, really difficult to score against them.
But I feel like there's sort of a blueprint when it comes to defeating Inter, and that is to take away the person who creates for them. And here's the thing, this is why I like Devers a lot. Not because I think that what he does is he sees what he has up front, which are three really fast forwards, and he obviously is going to go on the counterattack because, you know, they're a small team, right? Now, here's the thing. When we watched this match, you know, the reverse fixture of it, what did they do at the time? They put a man on Brozovic, and that was it. Inter couldn't do anything after that. It just became such a tough ask for them because they had no creativity. They became so predictable. Yeah. And at the time, everyone was complaining about the fact of how on earth could you play Godin against those back three? And why would De Vrij not be playing? Now, I feel like, once again, it's basically the same blueprint. Okay, this time, we're not going to go after Brozovic because he's not going to be playing. So let's try to take Eriksen out of the game. And they did it spectacularly well. And it's just that team ethic that they have going. And yet again, Godin was the band that they decided to choose. This time, he wasn't playing in the middle. But, I mean, you can't put Godin against Kulusevski. In my mind, it's like there's such a difference in pace over there. So for me, it's like, why didn't you guys, like, you know, see what happened the first time, try to create different ways that we can, you know, try to do something going forward? Because it was the same thing. It was just crosses into the box, no form of creativity, no Eriksen, no nothing, no Brozovic, no Partey last time. This time it was no Eriksen.
When you have injuries and submission, and when you have injuries,
it's still part of my, like,
that's what happens. I mean, you either Inter score a goal early. If Inter score first, it's an entirely different game. I think he went into it. Maybe he underestimated Parma a little bit. Maybe they said Parma are in no danger of going down. What motivations, you know, going back to the old days of Serie A, what motivations could they have? Maybe underestimated.
Okay, but let me ask you this. Why not start Ashley Young? Tell me that. Why would you start Godin against that front line? Why would you start D'Ambrosio?
I think it's a question.
Not that many people.
But I don't think Ashley Young would have made that much of a difference. And also Ashley Young is, what, 34 years old now?
He was such a better introduction when he came in. I felt like he was actually really good.
Well, one player who would have helped is Achraf Hakimi. No, I think that's, you know, something we need to talk about. I know producer Freddie doesn't want us to get stuck on this game too long, but I think that's something we definitely should mention, because it's one of the biggest, more unexpected signings, I think, that we've seen from Inter in a while. It's a player who most people thought was going to end up back at Real Madrid, a player who maybe even you could say did a number on Inter in the Champions League earlier this season, certainly played well against them.
How much did they pay for him?
The exact number, I don't actually know. It's about 40 million, is that?
44, I think it's 45 million euros, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a good, I mean, which I mentioned, that's a really good price, isn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, long contract, young player. And I think really interesting player for Conte, because I think it fits into this conversation we're having about creativity. I think when you look at Conte's teams, width has always been important. It was important even when he didn't have good wingers. Like, look at Italy in the Euros. It's like, okay, Giacchini's who I've got. I'm going to make that work. Like, this is, width is something that matters to Conte. And I think that it matters even more with the way this team in particular is playing. The way they attack you into this season is very often sort of the slow build-up play happens in their own half. It's a contrast with Juventus, because Juventus tend to pass the ball around a lot in your half. Inter do it in their half, and then they look to strike quick out of there. And Hakimi is a player who can play fullback, can play wingback, can even play midfield, but in any of those places is going to give you pace, is going to give you that explosiveness to come out of defence, the ability to beat a man and to take people on. Certainly in Dortmund with Sancho, he's had great sort of interactions, you know, using the wing and playing off someone. I don't know who that is who would play off him in that way at Inter, maybe Eriksen. But I think it's certainly a signing that fits what Conte's trying to do. And it's a signing that would address some of the problem you're talking about.
I completely agree. I think go beyond that. When's the last time Serie A signed somebody that was in the top five in the world, if not top three in the world, if not top two behind Trent Alexander-Arnold in his position?
Juventus and Ronaldo.
And wasn't old and was actually under the age of 25, so would actually have, you know, resale value. Yeah, well, that, I mean, but the saying is, that, that's Victoria the only other one that you can name, right? Oh no,
I, well, I this mean, just I, goes I think, to show Serie A is really now the league that people choose to come to. It's an exciting league. I think it's where you can develop really well.
I don't know how they manage. I mean, look, we know the backstory to this. That Achraf Hakimi has really struggled to play in a back four, right? Because he's so forward oriented. He hasn't had a manager that's transitioned him to become a better defensive player in a back four. And that's why Real Madrid said they weren't too fussed about losing him, because they said, you know what, we have Carvajal, we're better off in this situation. You know, let's raise some cash. There's a pandemic, whatever. And I get that. But I think Inter did so well to get him at 45 million, because unless this guy totally stinks it up for the next 2 years, you know, you're looking at attacking fullbacks are such an important part of the modern game. You could make an argument that Trent Alexander-Arnold is the most important player on the Premier League and defending Champions League champions. And here you have a guy who you'll get your money back easily in a couple of years if he moves on, and maybe you'll get much more than that if he moves on. So I've been so critical of Inter's transfer dealings in the past, but this one, hats off. I think this is a tremendous signing.
I think this is the kind of signing that I looked at, and then I read that there's a potential of Sandro Tonali also arriving, and it made me really miss having Beppe Marotta at Juventus and having Paratici instead right now. I think this was just the coup of the century. I think when you speak to his representatives and Achraf Hakimi himself, this was the perfect deal, exactly that. He wanted to learn how to defend. And this is something that he's actually been thinking about for nearly 6 months now. And for them, it was a case of, you know, I do think that his will of going there, he was so adamant that he just didn't even want to listen to other offers. That also might have helped Real Madrid just be like, all right, just be done with it. You know, wherever you want, let's go. But you're right, as in terms of how much it cost, I think this was just a fantastic deal. So well done to them. I honestly, with the money that they've raised now, this just goes to show you they have such potential now over the market. And I wonder what's going to happen next season. We also have to talk about Lazio, because, you know, Inter has this great season.
We have to.
We have to.
You sound so begrudging. Why not? Let's talk about Lazio. They're trying to fight for the title.
Because you know what? They don't excite me. I don't know what it is about Lazio at the moment, but I was a little bit bored with Atalanta doing really well before this. Now I'm really entertained by them again. I'm sort of going through that boredom now with Lazio a little bit. I'm just like, yeah, they're coming through, but I don't necessarily watch them and think, oh, what a team again. I mean, Acerbi's turning his back, you know, to players. I don't understand what's happening. Immobile finally scored a goal, you know, after like his third shot basically yesterday against Torino. But is this a Lazio side that scares you going forward?
I would say, like with Inter, they're yet to impress me. There's something, I suppose, a little bit more. I don't know. I think there's more there than there is with Inter at the moment so far. Still time to go. That little bit there might just come down to players like Luis Alberto, because of course it's been two games since we last came on here, and you know, it was Alberto's goal that won the first one. I think Immobile, it's funny because he's actually scored with the penalty scored in both last two games, but I'm with you, Mina. I think he's a worry. I think he's almost the biggest thing that bothers me in that team at the moment, because
right,
his goals were so important, were so fundamental, and yes, he's managed to get two in the last two games, but it feels like the Immobile who was there before the break would have had more. That's my feeling from these games that we've been watching. And that lack of sharpness at some point, yes, if you're going to keep winning games by a single goal, it's going to break the other way at some point. I do think it's worth remembering, though, that effectively they've had, a full week or more, almost 2 weeks, actually, less sort of active time since the restart than Juventus. They are still gearing up. Remember that Juventus had the two cup games, and actually their first league game back came... Lazio didn't get to play on that first weekend because they didn't have a game to catch up like Inter did. So it came late, Lazio's first league game, and they're piling up minutes in their legs very quickly at the moment. And yeah, but, you know, each time I say it, there's a bit less, but I keep wanting to say there's still a surprisingly large amount of season left here. There's still 9 games left. There's still time for form to come and go. And perhaps the important thing for Lazio is just after losing that first game to Atalanta that they've managed to take 6 points since.
I think that what you're saying, sorry, just Gab, just before you come in, I think that what they have in is that winning mentality, that desire to keep pushing forward, the way that they're celebrating the goals that come in. I do think they have that cunning ability in the sense of Caicedo winning the penalty, for example, against Fiorentina. It's like, we're going to do whatever it takes to get there. We're going to do everything that we can. I think they're missing the ability that was shockingly beautiful before, obviously, lockdown. Since then, it's more like we're going to do everything we can, even when we're playing badly, even when it's not going our way, even when Immobile is missing great chances to get it. And I think that does make a difference.
I think Caicedo's penalty should have never stood. And I think...
It shouldn't have.
If, put it this way, if they lose that game and the gap extends, I think at that point they collapse, especially then with the suspensions coming up. I think that call was absolutely huge, or non-correct.
I think it was a terrible call. I don't think it was a terrible call.
It was a terrible call.
At the end of the season, if Juve win the title and they win it in controversial circumstances, and as you know, I am anything but a Juve fan, you know, I hope people will no doubt bring this penalty up and say, like, aha, but what about this, you know? I think that was a stroke of sheer dumb luck, and that's what keeps them afloat more than anything else.
You know what, though? I have this feeling that even if Caicedo didn't, you know, get that amazing penalty, that they would have found a way. This is what makes me think that I don't want to count this against them, because they do have this, like, we're going to try everything we can. And usually they do it by entertaining us and, you know, throwing on and having all this energy when other teams start to tire. And you don't really have that at the moment. Although Torino did, for example, start to tire, and I think that's the reason they won that match. But I feel like it's this intensity that they've got to win, and they know that they haven't got the stuff to get them over the line, but they have the desire, and I think that might be enough. It might just be enough for Atalanta as well, because actually with Atalanta, it's the complete opposite. Like, have you ever seen a team play as amazingly as they're playing right now?
I mean, since the restart, I can't decide which way I prefer telling this. Like, because you can say since the restart, they've scored 10 goals and won all 3 games. I almost think it's more sort of illuminating to say since the restart, Atalanta have conceded 5 goals in 3 games, but they won them all, because that's, you know, that's how they're playing. It's sort of the ridiculous classic, we'll score one more than you, except maybe we'll score several more than you. Luis Muriel was the sort of player in my mind to talk about from this week, because I think he's now scored 15 goals. He's started 9 games all season. He's averaging a goal every 66 minutes, and most of them are flipping brilliant as well. So the sort of fact that, you know, you've got all these players that you think about and talk about, your Papu Gomez, your Josip Iličić, and then you've got Luis Muriel, who's genuinely just a super sub, but what an incredible super sub. This season for Atalanta. And I mean, it's a huge game coming up for them on Thursday night against Napoli. Probably Napoli's last chance, if there's going to be any chance for them to get into the Champions League, is this game. They need to win it. I saw this game described sort of quite entertainingly as the sort of the game between the two healthy clubs in Serie A, the two who turn out consistently profits on their balance sheets. And I thought to myself, well, two teams getting to that end by different roads. Atalanta by getting players like Muriel, who haven't done so well elsewhere, and adding value to them. Napoli, who make their might by suing their own first team squad. So different ways that you can make some money. But it's definitely should be a brilliant game the way both these teams are playing, I think.
I think there's a natural contrast in styles here, obviously, with the way Gattuso has played. I think in terms of individual technical ability, Napoli can keep the ball all day long against Atalanta and may try to do that to tire them out. I think that's the big conundrum to them. It's like, do you actually try to play possession football? Because you obviously have the individuals who can do that, right? In Zielinski and Fabian Ruiz and whatnot, and try to draw Atalanta out that way, try to destabilize them, and then you can pass your way through. You can pass your way through the press that way. Or do you just sit and pack the box and, you know, lump it for Ciro Mertens or Insigne or maybe even Chucky if he comes back. I think this is a huge call that Gattuso is going to make, and I agree with you, Nick. I think this game will determine whether Napoli have a shot at the Champions League or not.
I was being very facetious with that comment about saying the first team squad. Whatever else you think about Aurelio De Laurentiis, he actually does run a really tight ship in Naples. I mean, financially, they have been a very responsibly run club for several years. So I was being naughty, but actually, like, credit where it's due to both those clubs for keeping their ships in order.
I wanted to talk about the fact that, obviously, like, I do feel that one of the reasons why I really believe in Atalanta is because everything they went through with coronavirus and Bergamo being the epicenter. And I think on an emotional level, that's really pushing them as, and obviously they have Gasperini. So it's always going to be, with them, it's almost like, you know, they're always going to try their best and they actually have fun playing the game. But what was interesting about that match that they played is the fact that without Giroud, without Gosens, if they do change the squad a lot, Palomino at the back, there are hiccups that they will go through. And Udinese, for example, are a team that have individuals like Fofana and obviously Lasagna that can make the difference. And I'm worried going forward if something happens to one of their players, if they can really rotate the squad as much as, for example, when you look at the fact that Napoli changed, I don't know, 7 players when they played Spal. And I know I take it into consideration that this is Spal and they're not obviously playing Juventus, but I mean, they played with a midfield that had never played together before and they were marvellous, marvellous to watch. We know Fabian Ruiz is an excellent player, but I mean, I just thought that when you look at the fact that Lobotka was just doing exceptional things and how they were finding Dries Mertens, how they were finding Lorenzo Insigne, it just all works so fluidly. Again, the opponent makes a difference, but it's almost like they have the depth in Napoli. So going forward, if it is every 3 days and say 2 or 3 players from Atalanta start suffering, is it going to be the same? Or is that going to be a reason why they might potentially lose a few matches?
Valid question. I mean, I think Atalanta's squad depth is a question that people have highlighted, that even though I've sort of been talking about Muriel and his value off the bench, that Gasperini has tended to rely on a particular core of players this season. We don't know. We'll find out the answer. But they have, especially with Roma dropping points, they have a pretty significant buffer now to fifth place.
Well, if your money is, I would like some predictions between Napoli and Atalanta. Who do you guys think is going to win?
Gav?
Come on, it's Gattuso or Gasperini.
Do you know, I'll just say it. I'll take Atalanta to win this one. I think, you know, they're put me in the camp of I'm going to believe until they give me a reason not to.
With a heavy heart, I'll take Napoli.
With a heavy heart. You know what? I'm going to take Atalanta too, actually, because I just—it's amazing, right? Like, I don't know who else to go for.
Well, Napoli is team of players.
Okay, so the other exciting game was obviously the one that everyone wanted to know. I thought that Zlatan would be back for this, but hopefully he'll be back tonight in the match against Spal. But forgetting that a second, obviously Milan took Roma on. Managed to get their first big win against a big club. And I don't know, when you consider all that they managed against Lecce, when you consider this match, I'll be honest, I watched the first half of this and started to like sort of fall asleep by the time, like, you know, the halftime came through. But I was quite shocked by Roma. I really thought that in the first half they looked like the more dangerous side. But there's something different about this Milan side since they've emerged from this lockdown. They look like they're a lot more intense. They look like they're a team that want to push forward. There isn't the Zlatan factor to really consider, but Rebic, the whole team is working together really beautifully at the moment. And obviously, you know, it's going to be really hard for them to get into the top four. Right now, it's just about sealing a European place, which seems to be in their grasp. They've got Spal tonight, but they've also got Lazio over the weekend, which is going to be such a great match because there's no Caicedo or Immobile. They're both suspended for this. Is there a chance that Milan can continue to shock us?
I think so, yeah. I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, Calhanoglu's stepping up, Rebic is stepping up. They're in good form. I think most of all, they've been pretty solid defensively as well. And as we said before, Pioli can, I mean, in terms of, like, if you were to go and give people, I don't know, some sort of final exam about different systems and you had to know them all, I think Pioli would be Serie A star ahead of everybody because he's comfortable playing many different ways. And I think he's got something up his sleeve for Lazio, especially, you know, I don't know how they're going to line up front, whether it's going to be Correa or whatever, but I think he can set them up to counter Lazio. Big question, obviously, is going to be, will Ibrahimovic be back for this game? And how does it affect them? Because the reality is, yeah, if you have Ibra, he's a big bonus in terms of, you know, he's a great leader and whatever, and he's a huge presence, but you become very limited in how you can play if Zlatan Ibrahimovic is your center forward, especially when you're not in possession. You know, there's effectively no more pressing if Zlatan is up front. It's a lot more difficult for midfielders to make runs into the box. So I think all these things will affect Mina.
So are you saying that they should play without Zlatan just to keep it going?
No, I'm not. I mean, I would think long and hard. I mean, as we tape this Wednesday morning, we don't know if he gets minutes against Spal, then maybe you play him. If he doesn't, I certainly wouldn't start him against Lazio. I wouldn't have that as his first game back. Maybe bring him off the bench or something. I just think it's too much of a transition between now and then. I think you have to look at what the team is like and whether you can throw Lazio a bit of a curve. What you don't want is to get into this game and Ibra starts and Lazio sit deep and absorb the pressure and hit you on the counter, because everything that you're doing when you have the ball is just trying to lump the ball to Zlatan, who's going to have, you know, Acerbi and the whole Igor and whoever else hanging off him. It just doesn't make sense.
Nikki, are you worried about Lazio when you consider the fact that they are without their front two? And considering the form that they're in and they're really trying to fight forward, and how Milan are doing rather well, actually, you know, beating Roma in comprehensive fashion towards the end. Is this something that you think, as in, it's pretty much over? I mean, Lazio have Correa, and they're always a side that has different tactical plans to attack. But where's your money going on if you had to make a bet?
I mean, I don't know if I'd say I'm worried about them. Worried again. I'm not a Lazio fan, would imply that I have a horse in the race.
I'm everyone's fan. I'm worried about all of them. I'm worried about Spal.
Of course. I think Milan are playing pretty well since we got the restart. I think they are a team that cannot be taken lightly. I think there's every chance they can trip up Lazio. You know, I definitely don't underestimate that possibility. I do think it's a conundrum for Pioli, this situation with Ibrahimovic now, because I was talking on this podcast even just a week or two ago about the problem with not having Ibrahimovic is it changed the way you play, right? Since Ibrahimovic came into the team, you are, you can see it in the numbers, you're playing a lot more high ball centrally and letting him be a pivot, letting him be a target and play off him. And it's different with Rebic in the team. And funnily enough, it's working at the moment. Rebic, my scepticism, when he's not getting himself sent off, he has a very, very good strike rate at the moment. If you bring in Ibrahimovic, you play differently.
But he was also scoring goals when Zlatan was available. I mean, if anything, sure, people were saying, can he score the goals without Zlatan?
Sure, but I just think I think that's an element not to ignore. Is your team in a rhythm of playing a certain way? And if you bring in someone who requires you to play a completely different way, is that going to affect you? So, look, to answer your question, I don't find it far-fetched at all that Milan could trip Lazio up, no.
I think it's what's interesting about all of this is that in similar fashion, they both are having problems, you know, at the top level, sort of boardroom level. This is Roma and Milan, sorry. And, you know, Pioli gets asked in almost every single press conference about what's going to happen in his future and where does it lie. For him to sort of cast all of that out and create this Milan machine that he's created so far, it's only been a few games, so I'm not going to, you know, try really hard not to indulge in making sweeping judgments like I always do. But I feel like that's, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing that he has created the side that is so hungry to go and that is on a mental level. It's quite fun to watch it at this point. But there is a worry for me when it comes to Roma, because I'm, you know, as you all know, I'm madly in love with Fonseca. I think that he's such a good coach. But then you know, you're watching his games at the moment, and there are some when you're like, oh, I totally see it. Oh, this is why it's all coming together so beautifully. And then there are other matches, like against Milan, that you just wonder what's happening. And I don't know whether this is the boardroom level that's affecting them, which I don't think it is. I don't know whether Zaniolo coming back into the team might push them a bit forward. All of a sudden, he's become the savior. No, absolutely, he's not the savior. But I don't understand how Roma started off so well and now are trailing behind. And I don't know. If anyone watched that match against Milan, did you really think that they were going to end up losing 2-0?
Well, I think once you saw that he made, six changes to a starting 11, and when you saw how up for it Milan were, I think it became clear that, Roma lost 2-0, but I thought they could have leaked goals earlier. So I think you kind of have that end-of-season vibe in Rome, and they can't afford that, because it's really important for them to get in the Champions League. And I think this is a test of Fonseca's leadership and grasp over the players, I think, as well.
Yeah, because, the sporting director at the time had said something along the lines of, he's not watching them train with so much desire. And everyone was like, yeah, well, he's on his way out anyway. But I think maybe what he said is true. And Gab, I totally agree with you there, that, this is up to Fonseca now to try to get the best out of them. But let's go on to knee-jerk reactions, because I think this is, Nikki, your favorite segment. And I say this in every single podcast, by the way. I always refer to this, so getting a little bit tedious now. I have like a ton, but I don't know where to even start. But just before we get into knee-jerk reactions, should we congratulate a team that's made it into Serie A?
Yes. Pippo Inzaghi's Benevento are up in Serie A. I'm not really surprised, given the enormous lead that they had. But the witches are back.
Are you guys excited by like Loic Remy and the potential of getting someone like Andre Schürrle?
I think this is like a marketing thing that they do. I think you get the situation where people who've had great careers, or even Loic Remy standard careers, they say, "Hey, do you want to come live in Benevento for a year? You won't make that much money, but, good food, good weather, not far from the Amalfi Coast." And so Bakary Sagna does it, and now maybe these other guys do it. I think for a lot of players, especially these guys now, they make so much money. When you get to 30, maybe you think, hey, how about an experience? How about quality of life, rather than just hanging around a supposedly bigger team and everyday drudgery?
So we're going to have Simone Inzaghi and Pippo Inzaghi in the same league.
Possibly.
Do you think that we'll watch Benevento beat Lazio?
I think you're getting a little ahead there.
Yeah, let's one step at a time. But can we give a shout out? And sorry, just within the context of Loic Remy type signings, can we give a shout out to Frank Ribery and his goal? I thought was absolutely special. It's just weird that this guy did stuff like that 15 years ago and then he does it again. And by the way,
does it like coming off an ankle injury that he's only just recovered from at 37?
That's freakish athleticism, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Serie A really has it when it comes to veterans that can always shock us. Okay, so let's move on to the knee-jerk reactions. Let's start with you, Nikki.
I mean, sort of off the back of what Gab just said, I want to say that a knee-jerk reaction is that the standard of goals that have been scored since we've come back has been outrageous. I think you could compile an entire goal of the season shortlist just off the last 2 weeks, frankly. There's been so many brilliant goals from, just a 3-0 Juventus game to Luis Muriel to Frank Ribery. There's been tons. There's someone else I need to mention. I think Gab, I know, appreciated this one as well. But Tommaso Berni, the Inter's third-choice goalkeeper, has not played a game of professional competitive football, I don't think, since 2012 when he was at Sampdoria. Has now been sent off the bench twice this season for Inter. So my knee-jerk reaction is Tommaso Berni is just the protagonist that we never knew we needed.
Berni's like the... Yeah, because of the homegrown rules and the kind of crappy ways big Italian clubs get around them, they have ancient not particularly good third goalkeepers whose sole redeeming quality seems to be that many, many years ago they played in the youth academy. And as you know, Mina, Juve have a guy like that too. The legendary Mr. Pinsaglio, who I don't know if he's ever actually played football. He must have.
Yeah.
It's just a surreal situation. Yeah, I'm sure he's wonderful around the dressing room.
He is. He's always the guy that Ronaldo runs to. There were even shots all over.
What other purpose would these people serve, whether it's Pinsaglio or Berni? But yeah, no, Nicky's absolutely right about I think that's also the quality of goals. The quality of play has been really good too. I think actually maybe something as simple as the rest contributed to it as well in some cases. But for my knee-jerk, I go back to Hakimi. This was a brilliant, brilliant move. I think, like I said, in his role, I think the only guy better than him is probably Trent Alexander-Arnold, who annoyingly is even younger than he is. But to get a player like that at this stage of his development is really remarkable.
You know, I think Carvajal is actually probably the best right back. I think that I might be, you know, I don't know why, but I think he just has a bit more balance. But anyway.
Do you want to annoy the Liverpool fans again?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Don't want to do that. No, it's all Trent Alexander. Absolutely. I'm not even going to question that. I do think that goalkeepers like Storari was so important for the dressing room too. I'm just going to mention that again. My knee-jerk reaction is actually to do with Inter. Surprise, surprise, but it's not an insult. I promise. I do think, honestly, like, we have so many good centre-backs in Serie A. Some of them a little bit too old in Chiellini. Some of them, you know, De Ligt is still new and getting there. Koulibaly, obviously. But I really do think that De Vrij is probably the best at the moment. And I know that that just is a little bit out there. But I don't know if it is out there. Because he is, when he didn't play against Parma in the reverse match, I was like, you could really feel his presence, you know. And this time he did play And, you know, it's not like Koulibaly where you feel like he needs a good partner. It wasn't Albiol, you know, now it's Maximovic. Perhaps that's why, you know, he's finding his groove like he did with Albiol, which he didn't really with Costas Manolas. And then you feel like with Bonucci, he also needs a good partner. You know, there's a lot who rely a lot on the partnership that they have and the understanding that they have with the back. But De Vrij is almost like a one-man team. You know, it doesn't matter which idiot's playing next to him. He always manages to have such a good game. And contribute so much, not just defensively like he did against Parma, but also going forward, which he also did against Parma. And I just find like this defender, people said they're talking about hundreds of millions that they're going to spend on others. But if I'm Manchester City or Liverpool, if I want another great centre-back, then I'm going to go for him. Because right now it's like you can drop him wherever, you can have no midfield support, he can have no one next to him, and he'll always come through for you. And so I just want to tip my hat off for him because I think he's superb.
No doubt you've got a lot of love from Inter fans now for trying to sell their star central defender too.
Yeah, that is. It's just, I'm ruining it now. Like, I'm just going to have so many different fans coming after me. Trent Alexander, still God. Okay, so that's it. Do you guys have anything else to add? Or are we going to... Oh, I don't know. So let's just see what happens with the bet. I went with Atalanta... Gab, you went with Napoli. Nikki, you went with Atalanta too. So let's see what happens next week when it comes to that match. And we review everything on the Serie Awesome podcast. Thank you for joining us. And as ever, we hope that you'll join us next week as we go through the Serie A matches.